What's up, everybody? Happy Tuesday, and welcome to the latest installment of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. Today's is brought to you by our good friends at Mr. B Clothing down at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive, and I'm at the Souk Up today. You maybe even hear basketballs in the background. I'm in the office of one Matt Abdelmassi, an avid Cyclone Fanatic podcast listener. How are you today, Matt?
I'm doing great. Absolutely honored that I finally got invited to the podcast, because when I'm making my drives, I tune into the podcast, play them on my phone, and listen to them and laugh up at the obnoxious things that you and your guests like to say.
Obnoxious.
So I want to be a part of the obnoxiousness.
Obnoxious is actually a kind way to put it.
Yeah, I'll be kind. I'm not going to swear on this. I came into this with a really clear mind that I was going to try and not swear whatsoever.
Well, that's good. That's admirable.
Yeah,
I would think that. No, honestly though, this is a good opportunity, because I feel like you, unlike a lot of coaches, you actually enjoy doing something like this.
Yeah.
A lot of coaches would agree to do this, but not really have fun with it.
Yeah.
You clearly have fun when you come on our radio show on Thursday nights. I feel like this is a part of your job that you maybe don't hate.
Yeah.
So now that we have that established, when you do listen to, like, me and Bloom or me and Hines last week.
Which was painful here in Hines, but yeah, go ahead.
I mean, he's clearly, clearly a face for radio, that Travis.
Sure is.
Yeah. But when you listen to us, because clearly there are things that we are, frankly, babbling about.
Yeah.
At times. That's what we do. It's part of what we do.
Like
we
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Correct.
Yeah.
That, or perhaps there's an analysis that I have of your basketball team in the Iowa State basketball program that makes you go, come on, man, you don't know what you're talking about there. How much of that is there? I mean, you can be honest with me.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of that. I mean, of course, the fan's perception is far from reality, but that's what makes a fan being so fun. I mean, I'm a psychotic supporter of my sports teams, and we don't know what really is going on behind closed doors either.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're throwing a lot of shit on the wall and seeing if it stinks. And there goes my curse.
Yeah,
so,
that word has been dropped on this podcast a couple of times, so you're fine.
But yeah, there's a lot of things. But you know, the one thing that I do appreciate, and why I enjoy doing so many of these fun things like being on this podcast, is because our media are knowledgeable of our program. You guys do your background work, and I'm not just saying this because
I appreciate that.
But it's the truth. I mean, and that's at least somewhat of a good feeling when you have people that are. It doesn't have to be all positive things, because there's not going to be things that are always all positive. There never are, but the things you do say are always usually fair.
That's
so you appreciate that.
Well, and that's what I always try and do when I first got this job and started doing this. You'd sit down with coaches and you say, you know, that to me is the number one goal of everybody who does something like this. You may not like what I always have to say,
right,
but I always want it to be fair. And if not,
exactly,
I want you guys to have the, you know, to feel like you could pick up the phone and call me and be like, dude, that was completely out of line.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I feel like that's the case across the board at Iowa State, not just the men's basketball program. I feel like Rhodes' program's like
definitely
that. It's a good mix.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So you guys, now one question that I really have been curious about over the last week or so, when I look at your roster heading into the season, is I have a commentary, and I want to see how you respond to this, that in January, like at the end of January, February, I feel like it's impossible for every guy on your team to be happy with the playing time that he has received. Is that accurate?
What a great question to start this off.
No, I'm just saying.
No
though.
Softball question, well, just right down the middle where I can hit it out. But no, I agree. I mean, of course, I think there's 200 minutes to go around.
Yeah.
So to look at our board and say all 12 eligible scholarship players are all going to be happy, it probably isn't true. And I'll say this, is that we feel really, really confident 1 through 12 this year. We feel really confident with the pieces that we have, and that they're all capable of playing on any given night. And I think that's what you're going to see. You're going to see all 12 guys play this year. Now, how many minutes? I have no clue. Mm-hmm. But I do know that we do have a very peculiar situation with the fact that we have two guys not playing the first two games,
yep.
regular season games. We have one guy not playing the first eight. So those are a big chunk of minutes out of those three guys that someone else can go out and prove themselves. That could set them up post December 20th. And I expect those guys to step up that are going to have those minutes. But, you know, one thing that I've learned in my short career is winning is an absolutely beautiful thing. And when you do win, it cures so much.
Mm-hmm.
It hides warts. It hides unhappiness.
Yeah.
And it makes everyone in the program feel really good about what they bring to the table.
I was going to soften up that question before you jumped in. And my follow-up.
That's fine. I'd rather deal with hard questions.
No, that's good. That's good. Because my follow-up to that would be, isn't that a good thing? Though? Like, wouldn't you rather guys want to play more?
I mean, sit back and be like,
I'm cool with 10 minutes.
Yeah, you want a guy when you call him off the bench, they're sprinting to check in and going in there and contributing. They're on their toes constantly on the bench, just eagerly waiting their name called. And that's what I think where our program's at, and it's such a healthy environment because practice is so competitive. Guys are getting pushed every day. Guys are improving every day because they're getting pushed, and it's great. I mean, to have that as a coach where you're having the competition at the level it is really, really good.
I thought it was intriguing. A couple of weeks ago, you were on with Bloom and I on Thursday night, and Bloom asked you the biggest surprise so far during the preseason, and your response was how unselfish Bryce DeJean Jones has been leading up to now. I wanted to do a follow-up on that because that made me raise my eyebrows because, you know, if you hear anything from the West Coast coming into this thing, Bryce is going to come in here and just be chucking it all over the place, and it doesn't appear that's been the case. Can you give me just a couple examples from practice that maybe have led you to believe that?
Well, it's funny because we've taken 12 transfers so far, including Bryce, and each individual one had their so-called baggage.
Yeah.
Whether it's they're going to be a knucklehead on the floor, they're going to be selfish, they're going to cause this off the court, all that stuff. And I feel like we're batting a really good percentage. So you think by now that people would just probably not overly state the so-called negative things about these transfers, because we have a culture now where these kids come in like a DeAndre last year, where you heard the stuff prior. They buy in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come to a winning program, it goes back to that whole winning thing. People are going to buy in because this is their chance to go on the big stage, prove themselves, and have that chance to reach their dream and play in the NBA. And didn't happen for DeAndre. I do think someday, hopefully, he will play in the NBA. But he went out and had statistically one of the greatest years we've at least had in our years here, was dominant in all facets of the game. And then you move to the next year where a second consecutive year we get an immediate eligible fifth-year transfer. And the first thing people say is, well, I hope Iowa State could be really good if Bryce DeJean Jones buys in to what Fred Hoiberg's offense is all about being unselfish. And Bryce is a very, very great teammate. I think if you ask any of the guys, he's fun to play with, unselfish to say the least. He's always making the extra pass. But we also are telling him, hey, man, when you're open, shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's way too good of an offensive player not to take advantage of opportunities on the offensive end. But that has been – it's been very, very definitely, to me, been self-gratifying to see a kid like that just completely prove everybody wrong in the first, 2.5 months he's been in Ames. And I think he'll continue that. He'll continue that on the stage on Friday in the exhibition game, and he'll continue that moving forward throughout the year.
You bring up the exhibition game. I'm hearing that it's, like, close to a sellout.
Yeah, not shocking. I
mean,
that's
insane, though, man. That,
when I pulled up to Hilton Madness, I had my wife in the car, and I said, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are – they're special. And you just say to yourself, man, there's programs that have to give tickets away for free to get people in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
And to have the blessing of having people literally line up to go to a event where it's an hour long and all you're really doing is seeing, as Fred Hoiberg calls it, a dog and pony show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was awesome. A great first year event. I thought administration did a great job organizing it, and I think now we can build on it, hopefully, yeah, and make it bigger.
You need to get like a really like big time like country music star.
Yeah, like Rick Ross. Yeah, exactly. I think that would be really good for the fan base to have someone like Rick Ross come in here.
Like Kenny Chesney.
Yeah.
George Strait.
Blake Shelton.
Yeah, there
only
you go.
Because I have to watch The Voice.
Oh, it's a terrible show.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah. But yeah, it's not shocking. I mean, someone told me that today, that it's close to a sellout, and that's awesome. Our players deserve it, and that's why I think we have such a special home court advantage here, because our guys, I think, embrace the fact that we have such great support, and they know that they have a lot of responsibility with that.
You're going to need good support early in the season before we get more of some roster stuff. But that Georgia State team, man, coming in the second game of the year, that's like two NBA prospects on that team.
Yeah.
They're better than a lot of the teams in the Big 12, are they not?
Talent-wise, they have – that Georgia State is the mid-major almost like the mid-major transfer U of where Iowa State is at the high major level, where they're taking so many of these talented kids. They've done such a remarkable job of filling their roster with the most talented players they can get. And I think that's exactly what we've done. No matter where they come from, whether it's a high school kid, a junior college kid, or a transfer, we're just trying to get the most talented players, however we can fill those spots. And Georgia State's done exactly what we have. And it's going to be a really fun game. But talent level is going to be really high on that court. But
at the end of the day, too,
nationally televised.
Yeah.
I think 8 o'clock ESPN2 game.
Yeah.
So it's, and I've heard pretty much all 30 NBA teams will be represented that night.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So
that's
huge. That's huge for everyone that's on the court and involved in the game. And, that's great. It's great for everyone. But you know, listen, we have Friday and we have Oakland. We have two learning experiences.
You can say that, but I'm skipping ahead.
Yeah, no doubt. But with this team, though, we're going to need it.
Yeah.
We're going to need that experience on Friday night, just because, like I said, it's just a very interesting start of the season when three of your, you know, arguably top, you know, 10 guys are missing from your lineup. Mm-hmm. So it is really, Friday is a very important opportunity for us to take that and learn about our team a little bit more, and then go into Oakland and know more about it, and then keep growing and getting through this non-conference schedule.
I want to go back to the commentary you made on transfers there. I was reading one of the preseason magazines. I think it was Athlon. They had a like a recruiting guide, five things you need to know about recruiting. I think Gary Parrish wrote it, to credit him. And transfers was one of the things that he got into.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when you guys got to town and you took the four transfers, and it was like, oh, you know, it was so shocking
right
to everybody at the time. And it was almost taboo. You know, you guys
agree. I remember. Yeah.
In this state, I remember people.
Crazy. The negative feedback that we were getting, like we're this renegade program
and
that we're taking all these rejects. Really, that nobody wanted, but that couldn't be further from the truth, because the kids we've taken were pretty highly sought after. But when Fred took the job, I mean, we had to try and get this place on the national stage as quick as possible, and that's the only way we could have done it, is try and take some risks. And we knew there were risks, and we knew the reward was going to be really great, and the reward paid off. And it really starts with Fred Hoiberg. His ability to relate to these kids and get these kids to buy into the team concept, buy into the program, buy into Iowa State University as a whole, that's what separates our success from maybe other program success with transfers. And it's not going to stop. I mean, it's kind of like it takes care of itself now. You have like a kid like Bryce that comes in. There's nothing he needs to be taught. I mean, he's going to get it really quick. He's going to get the sense right away from the jump when he gets here what it's like to be an Iowa State Cyclone. So, yeah, it was hilarious. And it's still the case, though. I mean, when you take a transfer, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
It seems like that's never going to go away, but at least it's kind of diminished a little bit because so many schools do it now.
But, and that's the thing. Like, Duke's doing it.
Yeah, no doubt. It's Kansas is doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how have you noticed, though, like on the recruiting trail or whatever, that – you know, 5 years ago compared to now, where I think it had so much more of a negative connotation back there, and now it's just seen as kind of like, you know, college basketball's an additional recruiting period.
Yeah, like when you're recruiting a higher-level high school kid and we're involved with so many of them is, you know, 2 years ago they might have used that. Their families might have used that as a negative. Man, you guys are taking all these high-risk kids. What are you doing? Like, mm-hmm. what are you guys thinking? What goes through your mind when you take some of these kids? But it's not like we just take them. I mean, we do our due diligence. We decipher through all the information that we can get from whoever has been involved with this kid and decide as a staff, okay, we understand what we're up against, but we also know that we're very capable of doing it because when you have caring people like we do on our staff that are really here to make our kids better human beings after they leave than when they first came here, and that's exactly what I feel like we've accomplished since we've been at Iowa State. Besides all the winning, which I think is been great, but mm-hmm. I feel really good about what we've done for some of the kids that we've brought in, making at least a career for themselves, making them better people than when they first came in. And it's so ingrained in the culture now. I think there was 800 transfers last year,
mm-hmm.
and I only think that's probably going to increase because no one has patience anymore. And
they really don't.
It's being from a place that I have no patience, and I've grown to have some patience. I can relate sometimes when you want things to happen right away. That's the culture that we kind of live in now. We want things to just automatically snap into shape and be delivered to us, whether it's playing time or whether it's getting a job at a college. We just want things to happen so quickly, but we don't want to do the necessary things to get to that point.
Yeah.
Are you working hard enough? Are you putting the extra work? All that stuff. And that's why 800 kids each have their own individual story on why they're transferring, and fortunate enough that we've been able to capitalize on that.
Fred Hoiberg is a very humble human being. Because I know if I asked him this, he'd give me some runaround, and it wouldn't be a poor answer.
So you're asking me because you think I won't give you the runaround?
No, I think you're going to give me a solid, honest answer here. So I want to know how you guys have never had to deal with expectations, really. Even last year, I think we locally we all knew you guys were going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But nationally, you still weren't getting the
right
respect that you probably earned leading up to last season. This season, you're picked, you're top 15 in the polls. The Big 12 picked you fifth, but I take that with a grain of salt. It was really close. You were so close to being fourth. That was a crapshoot, I think, with those first five teams. I want to know how you guys deal with the expectations leading into the season. Is it simply a day-by-day goal? Or when you guys are addressing the team, you know, in October and November, are you talking about, we want a Big 12 championship, we want a national championship? How far down the road do you look, and how do you deal with those expectations because of it?
Well, I think where we're at as a program, we're very vocal that our expectations are to be playing in Indianapolis. That's for sure. That's what we tell our guys, and that's what we're shooting for. But we also know that there's a lot that can happen between November 2nd today, and I think that's the date.
It's the 3rd.
Okay, well,
it's
shortchange
3rd, but whatever.
Shortchange our audience a day, so it's November 3rd to April.
Yeah.
There's so much that can happen, and we feel like we have so much control over what can happen because we have the talent. And I think that's the biggest thing going into this year is we're just a very overly confident group, and not to a default, a confident group in regards to knowing how hard we have to work with how short we came last year with mm-hmm. beating UConn and making an Elite Eight and keep going. Of course, George Niang's injury no doubt hurt. He was playing the best basketball of the season last year. He was our best player going into the North Carolina Central game and just playing with ultra confidence. But at the end of the day, we still had opportunities to really achieve some special things, and we did. Winning the Big 12 championship was awesome, but that set the barometer higher going into this year. And like I said, every time we huddle up, it's all of the important things about taking care of academics, taking care of off the court stuff, and making sure we make the right choices not to affect anything negatively to reach our goal come April to go to Indianapolis. And we have so much control over it, which is a great feeling. And the whole one day at a time thing, I'm never really big on that, one game at a time, because I think it's human nature to look ahead. Yeah. And any coach that tells you that they're not looking ahead is probably lying to you. And I think really, though, this year, literally, we will take it one game at a time, because we just have so many interesting things going on in the early part of the season that we're going to have to overcome as a team, and it really is going to be one game at a time.
How do you view Jameel McKay coming into the lineup December 20th? To me, it's like you guys are signing a huge free agent right before a playoff run.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. No, it's probably going to feel that way on December 20th.
Yeah.
Getting a kid of his caliber to come in and play. But, you know, this is going to be an important 6 weeks between now and December 20th, where he's going to have to really get integrated and really sharpen his focus to where it's almost like he's playing on Friday. And it's a really hard thing for a kid to get.
Yeah.
Because they know they're not. But they really need to get into that, where they're prepping themselves mentally and physically for every game between now and December 20th. So getting Jameel to that point is really important to maximize his opportunity come December 20th. But listen, there's no hiding it. He's going to be a huge piece moving forward after December 20th and on December 20th.
It'd be nice, though, to get him. You get Drake. He gets a neutral floor game.
Yeah.
Mississippi Valley State, a home game.
Yep.
And then you go to New Jersey for South Carolina.
Also known as Brooklyn, yeah.
Oh, you're in Brooklyn?
Yeah, we're in Brooklyn.
Man, I don't know my New York.
All I know is that they built, unfortunately, another arena. There's only one arena in New York. It's Madison Square Garden, so we're playing to the Step Brothers Stadium or arena
of
Barclays Center.
So you guys are playing in New York?
Yeah, I think it's an outside court under the Brooklyn Bridge. Hopefully it's not snowing. But yeah, to have those three games is going to be huge.
It gets three levels of competition.
Exactly. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And different styles to play those three games going into the Big 12 season is huge. So luckily we added that neutral site non-conference game after December 20th, because prior we thought we were maybe he was going to miss nine games. So it was great that we got that game at the Barclays Center.
No, absolutely. I like your non-conference schedule. It's not – it doesn't have the an array of ranked teams, but I feel like it's
– We're not going to Hawaii.
You're not going to Hawaii. But at Iowa, that's going to be – I tell you what, Matt.
Awesome.
That's going to be an
– Huge.
An intense atmosphere.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. You know, I think at the end of the day, anytime you have an in-state rival like that, tends to be a really special event, and there's not going to be no shortchange of love and hate in that building, I'm sure, after the game we had last year. But that's what makes it special, man.
Yeah.
I tell everyone, it is the most underrated rivalry in college sports. Football, basketball, wrestling, soccer, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's always an event. I mean, the women's soccer team, what'd they have, like 2,500 people, 3,000 people, their biggest crowd. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is absolutely amazing. And that just speaks to how much the people in this state rate the importance of whatever night Iowa versus Iowa State's happening. And that's going to be great. It's awesome for our guys to experience a hostile crowd like that, because we clearly playing them come Big 12 season.
No, absolutely. All right. I want to ask you some just kind of off the wall questions.
For sure.
What makes Bill Self so great, in your opinion?
Ability to deal with the dynamic of expectations literally every year. He's the Atlanta Braves of college basketball, and I know I see your eyebrows.
I love it.
Yeah, everything's getting really happy with you, but they're most underachieving, talking about the Atlanta Braves, the most underachieving Major League Baseball team, maybe professional sports team of all time.
You're probably true.
That's another podcast.
Probably true.
We can talk about that for 60 minutes in itself. But, Yeah, Bill Self, to me, is one of the best coaches in the country at dealing with expectations in such a great way, dealing with new guys coming in and out every year on his roster. But that's why also I think so highly of John Calipari. I mean, the immense pressure that guy deals with every single year, and he just restocks every single year. It's amazing what those guys – I mean, and they're the results speak for itself as well. It's just so hard to compete at the level they are, and winning every year is remarkable.
Okay, so you just threw out Calipari. I've already – and you can't say Fred here. Give me a head coach across the country, a guy who either maybe you know, maybe it's a guy who you've witnessed from a distance for a while, but who's a guy who you really look up to in this business?
Guys that are – The guys that I look up to in this business are a guy like Ed Cooley, who's at Providence, you know, who's grinded it out, won at different levels, was a heck of a recruiter as an assistant, got his crack at Fairfield, and then takes his hometown job at Providence and immediately makes an impact. You know, guys that necessarily weren't just handed things on a silver platter and say, here you go. Mm-hmm. Guys that have grinded it to get to the point where they're at. And I'm sure the viewers are saying, well, you haven't grinded it because you kind of fell into a gold mine meeting Fred Hoiberg. Because there's plenty of people that have said that to me. And, you know, what I say is that I worked really hard to get where I'm at. And that's why I really appreciate the guys like Ed Cooley that have worked at all kinds of different levels. Guys like Buzz Williams at Virginia Tech, who was a manager, guys like Mick Cronin, who was a manager, and just kept working and fighting through the negativity that kind of clouds you in this business and getting to a point where they are running national programs and doing a heck of a job doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. What about Steve Lavin? How's that going to go this year? Are you cheering? Like, because you're a St. John's guy.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
When you're not coaching the Cyclones, are you sitting back and watching them?
I follow them religiously. It's my alma mater. I've been a St. John's fan. It was the only school I applied to in college and said
and
if
you
I,
made it. They,
if
they
I didn't
it.
Get yeah, if I didn't get in, I wasn't going to college. Who knows what my life would have been at? Probably would have been selling hot dogs in Times Square, and now the rest is history.
Yeah.
Of course I follow them, and of course, as a fan, want nothing but the best for them unless we're playing them, and which would be pretty sweet if we ever got to match up against them. But there's a lot of expectations this year. I mean, they have so much talent, and you're really looking forward to sitting back as an alum and seeing where things go.
Looking forward to watching the Hoops Marathon.
Yeah,
I love
as a hoops junkie, how can you not? I mean,
can you guys get on that? Can we do something to get Iowa State on the Hoops Marathon?
Yeah, I know it would be awesome if we did, but I don't know how that would really work. It would be sweet to play a game at Hilton Coliseum at like 7 in the morning.
That's what I'm talking about,
It'd be
man.
So sweet.
That would be awesome. But, the problem you got is you guys fill up the arena. I feel like a lot of the teams that are on that have like a third full of the arena all the time anyway.
Yeah. No, I think it would be – of course, it'd be sold out if we played – we can play at 2 a.m. That place is going to be sold out.
It would be.
Yeah, and no doubt about it.
The Turbo is coming to town, and it's going to be a sellout.
Yes, and they'll probably be tailgating because that's how great our fans are.
There will be.
But, yeah, it would be awesome if we can be a part of that. I don't think it's going to happen, but it would be pretty sweet.
Okay, what about I'm an ESPN producer, okay?
Yeah.
Give me a reason why the Kansas game needs to be College Game Day.
The reason why it needs to be College Game Day is look at our attendance.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the fact that just because we're a couple thousand seats less than Allen Fieldhouse is the only reason why we're not number one in attendance every year.
That's actually a good point.
That's why. I mean, and like we just said, we could have a game at 2 a.m. It's going to be sold out. So guess what? If you have the doors open at 6 a.m. for College Game Day that starts at 8 a.m., it's going to be absolutely ridiculous. We're going to represent the Big 12 Conference so well if they give us that opportunity. We're going to represent the so-called hidden gems of college basketball so well. And I think ESPN would be doing something really wrong and a disservice to the Big 12 and to Iowa State if we didn't get that opportunity.
I would agree with that. That and you guys in Kansas, I mean, look at the games you've played
for the last phenomenal.
Classics.
Yeah, man. No
just
doubt
classics.
About it. And I hope that that all comes into account. I do actually like what they're doing. It sounds like they're literally waiting. They're going to do it week by week, and they're going to announce it, similar to how they're doing college football.
Yeah, they want the best game.
Yeah, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And I'm confident enough, hopefully, going into that week where the best game that they feel.
I kind of feel like there's a decent opportunity for that to happen. How do you see the Big 12 overall this year? Because when I look at it top to bottom, I mean, I don't see much of a drop-off from last year.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a TCU. Let's just take TCU. They were the worst team in the league last year. I think you can make an argument, and you don't have to commentate on specific teams if you don't want to. I know that might put you in a bad spot. I feel like TCU could potentially – you know, if things come together really well for him, be better than Oklahoma State and Baylor this year. I'm just saying, like, I feel like top to bottom, this league is as strong as it's been for a while.
When you have 70% of your league make the NCAA tournament, I think that epitomizes the standard that this conference does have, and that's making the NCAA tournament. And I would think that we'll compete for another 7 spots, maybe even an 8th team. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But from top to bottom, it's ridiculous. Every night's a grind-out game. Whether it's home or away, there's no easy game. There's no easy opponent. I think teams have improved that we're at the bottom of the conference, and teams are looking to capitalize off of some of the kids that they brought into their program that were sitting out, and they have a lot of expectations. And it's the reason why you're the best conference is because you have not just a top-heavy conference, a middle-heavy, of course, not bottom-heavy, but just the whole group is it a potential loss.
How many losses can you have this year in the league and win?
I personally think you have to go 9-0 at home, and you have to go be over 500, so 5-4 on the road. I think,
four losses
at least gives you a share of the Big 12 regular season. That's kind of where my thought process is on it. And I think if you look past in the past with records, I think it kind of vibes with what I'm thinking. So that's a goal for us. I mean, you know, you got to protect home court.
That's what's crazy. You just think over the last 2 years just how close you guys have actually been for the regular season. Just tiny little things go differently.
But that's what comes with it, man. You have to be lucky. For people to say there's no luck involved, I mean – That's completely false. You have to have the ball bounce your way. You have to have the ball bounce in like we've had last year. I mean, we so many close games. We were on the better end of it, whereas the year before we were on the short end of so many close games.
Yeah.
That team was ridiculously talented, and we were playing ridiculous basketball come NCAA tournament time. I mean, our seed could have been so much better if the ball bounced the right way that year, and it didn't. And last year it did, and we were at 3 seed, and the rest is history. So, you know, there's no doubt it's so much of this game is the hot team at the right time, you know, matchups, all that stuff. That's why the NCAA tournament's such an unbelievable spectacle in sports, because it's so unpredictable.
Yeah.
That's why people love it.
Well, and you guys were the hot team last year,
we were.
I think.
Yeah, no doubt. We went in with a lot of buzz and deservedly so when winning the Big 12 tournament.
Is that organic? Like, does that happen automatically, or is that something where you guys as coaches can aim to have your team peak at that time? Or is that a deal where, I mean, last year there was a ton of chemistry, I thought, with that basketball team that allowed you guys to, you know, keep improving throughout the season. Then you got hot, started making some shots at the end, or, you know, is that a deal where you can actually fabricate that and, you know, try and do things to create that trend?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, where we were at as a team last year and the so-called confidence we were playing with is ridiculously important in order to take us to the next level. And I thought that's what separated last year's group from maybe the past year's group, is that, man, they had such a ridiculous swagger about them that every night they stepped on the floor, we thought we were going to win the game. I think we had 8 come from behind
yeah,
victories.
I believe so.
That speaks to the confidence level that we have. So, you know, and I think that confidence has moved on through the summer and our strength and conditioning program to development to where it is today. Is we have a conference group, their expectations are really high, and as a coaching staff, that's a pretty good feeling when you have a group of kids that is that confident.
And I don't know Bryce Jajon Jones.
Yep.
I don't know Jameel McKay. These guys are all new to me. I've never covered them. That's the where you're going to miss Edgem and Kane the most, in my opinion, because both of those guys, having been around them, no fear at all. You know, Edgem, and I'll say this, and this is complimentary, was kind of a jerk sometimes. You know, like,
yeah,
if he felt like you were slighting to him, if he felt like, who'd he get into a scat with on Twitter? I think it was either Gottlieb or one of the national guys who called him a glue guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And he went back at him. He had that chip on his shoulder. And DeAndre Kane, in my opinion, was a lot like Melvin Edgem in that sense, where DeAndre Kane walked into a gym. It didn't matter if LeBron was there.
Right.
In DeAndre's mind, he's the best player on the floor.
Oh, no, that's the swag that those guys played with. And they were two literally different people.
Yeah.
Like you hit it exactly how it was. I mean, DeAndre walked onto the court, he thought he was the best player. Now, he was also like 6 years older than most of the guys, but regardless, talent wise, he thought he was the baddest guy on the court.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
And Melvin, listen, 4 year player at a high level, unbelievable achievements. Trust me, his confidence level was ridiculous as well. Mm-hmm. He had an arrogance, a positive arrogance about himself that...
Which, his size, you don't rebound like he does unless you have
exactly.
That.
Not exactly. And listen, Melvin Edgem overachieved in his 4 years here, but overachievement comes with hard work, and that kid worked really, really hard to get to that point, and he deserved reaped all the benefits with all the accolades that he received in the spring. And to get a four-year player like that, man, it's like one in a million. Luckily, we have a few, I feel like, on this team.
What are the chances, though, like when you guys first get to town and Melvin Edgem is a freshman, that he's going to be the player of the year?
I would have lost a lot of money. You know, the crazy thing is it's funny, you know, especially someone that is always trying to plug in names and roster and see what vibes and what works. Calvin Godfrey, his freshman year, was, I thought, really, really good, and a kid that can maybe start all 4 years. Of course, unfortunately, we didn't have him the rest of his career, but what happens if Calvin's on the team?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens with Melvin Edgem? Is he unhappy, or what transpires? If I had a guess, everything would have been fine. He would, knowing the kid he is, he would have worked ridiculously hard and found himself onto the starting five, but it's amazing where that kid came every single year in college, and he played with so many different guys, many different lineups, and just made it work. And he served a different purpose on every single team he played on. And of course, this past season, the purpose he served was being just Mr. All Around for us and what he did.
All right. It's time to wrap this up and get with the important questions.
Yeah.
Your Knicks, man, so they lost the Bulls to my Bulls at McBuckets in the opener, but then
you mean got embarrassed? Yeah.
How sweet was it for you when they went into Cleveland and won?
Oh God, I told Fred that I got so excited that I felt like they won Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
You know, it's been a long time since y'all have had much success at that.
God, man, and even last night, man, I sat there so excited. They played Charlotte. I mean, it's a Sunday night, and I mean that was.
You're jacked up about a Knicks
so
Charlotte game on a Sunday.
To be one game over 500, 2-1. I actually tweeted yesterday. I'm really impressed with Derek Fisher's demeanor on the sideline, and I tweeted that it reminds me of a calm, cool collective at ISU Mayor 32.
Oh, nice.
And
don't be doing those Hoiberg NBA
whatever.
Tweets,
the Hoiberg NBA thing, that's going to always be around anyway,
okay,
so we might as well just talk about it. Why
right.
run away from it?
Have some fun with it,
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, Derek Fisher's been really impressive so far. I mean, but listen, 82 games, dude. Who knows what the heck can happen? I'm gonna savor the 2-1 start right now.
You're 0-1 against the Bulls, and I will keep. I'll keep
we'll
you updated.
We'll probably be 0-4.
I'll keep you updated on those standings throughout the year. What do your NBA friends tell you about Niang?
They love him. I mean, he got exposed to some of those NBA people that we're friends with playing in those different skills academies, specifically LeBron this past summer, and they love his ability to score. I mean, yes, is he undersized? Of course. Is he athletic? Mediocre at best. But what he can do is score the ball. He's going to compete. He's going to push guys. He's going to make shots. And that's what guys want in the NBA. They want guys that can score. So he's going to have a chance.
Is he like a – right now I think it's fair to call him this, but like a poor man's Doug McDermott for the college game? If he sticks around for 4 years, could he be that type of a guy?
Not necessarily
the numbers that Doug put up.
Right.
The same style of player, I think, 4 years.
I mean, people all the time talk about comparing him to Kevin Love, but unfortunately, Kevin does have a few inches on him and his rebounding ability is ridiculous, but Doug McDermott is a great example. I mean, George's ability to score is what's ultimately going to hopefully get him on an NBA roster.
You just mentioned Kevin Love. He's kind of your boy, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you're rooting against him the other night?
Oh, of course. Yeah. You think my happiness is more important than that guy's?
All right. That's
for
fair.
Sure.
That's fair.
I needed that win in my life a lot more than Kevin needed that win in his life.
I guess that's fair, and he's got millions of reasons to think otherwise.
Trust me. There's not one day that goes by that I feel bad for that guy. He's about to sign $120 million. He's going to make – when he signs his next contract, he's going to have made over $200 million as a basketball player.
Okay.
And that's ridiculous.
I'll never root for Kevin Love again.
No, you should. He is a great guy.
But he plays for the Cavs, man.
And he called into the call-in show with
that
John
was
Walters
epic.
Once.
That was so awesome. Was that Fred's first season?
That was Fred's first season. I was texting with them. I said, hey, call this number right now. I'll mess with – And they had no clue for a second what the heck was going on. It was fun.
That's awesome. All right, you referenced this early on. Who is your favorite teenage turtle? This is kind of a staple here on the podcast. Because my point is you can always tell a lot about a man by his favorite teenage turtle. So there's a lot of pressure
Splinter.
On Splinter. Oh, you're going to go straight heel on us, huh? Oh, man. Master Splinter. Wait a second. I was thinking of Shredder. Splinter's the rat.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's the old rat.
Master Splinter. That's my guy.
That's all right. No, that's
for qualities that
that's,
we
– That's actually a really good answer.
Yeah. The turtles, they're all cool and all, but they have kind of all their, lameness, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they all
I
have
think
their
Master
fallback.
Splinter was the ringleader behind everything.
He's the Hoiberg.
He is.
Of the
he keeps
turtles.
It all together.
All right, so if Hoiberg is Splinter – which turtle are you?
Oh,
because, you know, Hoiberg is rallying the troops. So you've got you got Korn, you got Charlie.
Individually? Which, who knows which, what each
You're
staff,
Michelangelo, man. You got the pizza.
I would need a long time to think about what individual guy on each of our staff, what turtle they
I'll
are.
Say this. Charlie is Donatello.
Yes.
He's, the more calm.
Yes, for sure. Although you see him as calm, but he better have eaten lunch by noon because he doesn't get calm then.
Okay. Cornell is Raphael. Pretty aggressive
Fair.
Guy.
Fair,
You're
yeah.
Michelangelo.
Yeah.
And Leonardo does not exist on the staff.
Agreed.
Okay. I think
pretty good.
Fair. I think that
someone,
this is what
someone should probably make a Photoshop of this, of that.
You know what's funny? You say that, and I about guarantee you one of our listeners will do that. They're
I'm
very
sure
avid
they will.
Group.
They are the best Photoshopers in all of college basketball because I see what
true.
They do for our guys.
This is true. This is a dream come true of mine. I'm sitting here just comparing Fred's staff to the Teenage Turtles. I love it.
Oh,
Matt,
man.
Thank you, man. It's fun.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Hopefully can come back. You know, you mentioned something in the beginning about how a lot of coaches don't like doing this part of the job and participate in fun activities like this. But growing up in the media capital of the world, I always have an appreciation for media guys. And I think it's really important to always make sure you have those guys on your side and treat them with respect because they have a job too.
Yeah.
And they're kind of in a compromising predicament, I feel like, every day. Because, yeah, you know, you regard some of them as your friends, and but they still have to do their job. Mm-hmm. And I've always appreciated the upfront mentality of being a media guy, especially like a guy like Mike Francesa in New York, who's very upfront. And I really enjoy talking to guys like yourself, and someday maybe I'll have my own radio show.
Well, we'll do a podcast. After you retire, we'll both be old and grizzled.
Yeah.
At that time.
Well, we'll do a retirement podcast.
Yeah, we'll do like a national college basketball podcast on our own little website that like 45 people get on.
Yeah, that'd be epic.
Thank you, though. I appreciate, though, is you give real answers.
Definitely.
And if you didn't, I wouldn't invite you to come on.
No, so. Listen, our fans deserve real answers. I mean, they're as genuine of people. Anywhere I go in the state, it's funny. People notice me now, which is somewhat scary. They know who I am, and it's always awesome visiting with people. I had to go to my sister-in-law's wedding this past weekend in Davenport, and, you know, it was awesome just visiting with people that I met there.
Signed some autographs, did you?
No autographs, but I'm just trying to slowly convert Hawkeye fans to Cyclone fans, and I think I achieved that this past weekend.
Nice. Tell the story. This is worth a story.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I get introduced by this big doctor in the Davenport area who's friends of the family of my wife's, and he's really excited to introduce me to his fellow doctors that were also there.
They're all Hawks if they're doctors.
Listen, all Hawks,
yeah,
all avid Hawk fans, but just really excited to sit down and talk to me just about basketball, about Iowa State. Because one thing, you might be a Hawkeye fan, but I think they have so much respect for Fred.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened with these guys. They absolutely love Fred. And we started talking, and I said, guys, listen, I will find it to be very disrespectful if you did not come to a game at Hilton Coliseum. And on top of it, also wear Iowa State gear. They looked at each other like, man, is this guy crazy? Like, does he not know how crazy? And I said, I'm going to say it again. I'll be very insulted if you don't do it. And guess what? They said, we're going to make sure we text your wife, and we're going to ask for tickets. But you know what? My luck, they're going to ask, hey, can we come to the Kansas game?
Kansas.
That's exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah, guaranteed.
But I'll have to make it happen because
that's
slowly start changing the state.
All right.
Doctor by doctor.
That's good. That'd be a lot of good boosters if you can get them on board.
But I can't change it completely because I think, like I said, it's the most underrated rivalry in all of college sports.
I'll tell you this. As a guy who's lived here his whole life, it's come a long way because it used to be all Iowa.
Right.
And a little bit of Nebraska and then a little bit of Iowa State. And it's not that way anymore.
Yeah. No, our support, you can definitely see it around the state.
You've had like 10 people knock on the door. So I'm going to end this podcast. But thank you. Good luck on Friday.
Definitely.
And we'll follow
Appreciate
you all year.
Appreciate it.
Right?
Thanks, man.
He's Matt Abdul-Massey closing out today's podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.